Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm joined once again by my good buddy, Kevin Luco. And Kevin, we've had a couple of months here, almost a little over a full month since the American Association season ended, but I know you're keeping yourself busy around Faribault.
Yeah, my voice is kind of a little bit just kidding. My voice wasn't that bad, but it was bad enough where I think it was in my best interest that I take a little time off. And I'd like to thank Dan Vaughn for filling in quite incredibly well for me. I listened into the show and thought you guys had a really good episode in my absence. So I was worried that I wasn't ever going to be invited back again. I thought I was going to get Wally pipped.
Well, you know, I've said that the year that Sean Aronson won Broadcaster of the Year, that he won because of those two games that he let me sit in on, because obviously the people voting thought if he could do that well with that guy sitting with him, he must be the Broadcaster of the Year. So I'm helping Dan to improve his image out there on the web. Everybody will think that he's as good as we know he already is. So
yeah, you know, it's kind of like the average-looking gal going to the bar with ugly friends. It's going to make her look even better. So,
absolutely right. Well, Kevin, not a lot has been going on around the American Association, but there have been some pretty sizable announcements that have gone on. And we're going to start with Winnipeg that makes two big trades to improve this team for next year. Both, I thought, are outstanding moves by the Goldeyes.
Yes, I was just came over the Twitter sphere today that the Goldeyes have acquired a center fielder from Washington. I believe you got the name of the young man.
James Harris.
He was a Frontier League MVP and center fielder for the Washington Wild Things, and Rick Forney acquired him in exchange for Jordan Ebert, who had been a really good utility guy for the Goldeyes the last couple of seasons. So
then they make a big move with Sioux Falls, adding Dylan Thompson for Alex Beauchiers.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting move there, and gives both guys a fresh start in a different place. I know talking to Joey Mellows, he had talked to Alex Beauchiers, and I think Dan Vaughn had too, and Beauchiers was kind of worn out from pitching dang near year-round the last couple of years, and I think that kind of showed up in his performance with the Goldeyes.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
And maybe it sounds like he's taking the winter off, so we'll see maybe a refreshed Beauchiers will pay off huge for the Canaries next summer.
Well, we saw Alex have such phenomenal seasons in Wichita, especially the last two where he won 12 games in both of those years. And then last year was a real tough season for him, and I think that it was kind of the overworking of it because he was, you know, one a guy we figured who was going to come into Winnipeg and be a part of just a dominant pitching staff that just didn't materialize, had probably his worst season as a professional. And maybe that a move with Mike Meyer is just the kind of thing that he needs to kind of get his career back on track.
Yeah, it could be. We saw with our good friend Mark Hamburger injured his rotator cuff out in New Britain this summer, and the belief there was that he was probably throwing too many innings too, and you know, as much as he brags about you, can't break Gumby. Well, it's a lot of exertion on the body, and eventually the body's going to wear down, especially if you're not giving it enough rest. And a scoop there, it sounds like Hamburger is doing therapy. He's going to forego surgery, and says he's feeling a lot better, and we'll see where he lands this spring. He'll be back in New Britain, or off chance he could be back in Minnesota, but we'll see about that.
You know, I think you're bringing up a very interesting discussion, because I've talked to a lot of the managers around the American Association, in particular about, is it a good idea for a guy to, especially a pitcher, to continue playing all year long? I mean, I get for a hitter, maybe it's not as big of a deal because you're working on the rhythm of things. But for a guy that's tossed, and let's just take an Alex Beauchiers, who's used to tossing 110, 115 innings in independent baseball, Then you head to Australia to throw 50, 60 more, plus all the countless warm-ups and everything else that goes in that. Maybe it is time to start examining that playing winter ball really isn't the best thing for these guys.
Right. We're seeing guys on the big league level again shut down. The younger guys are getting shut down after like 170 innings, and that's kind of compressed within a Major League Baseball season. Hard to say, you know, is it worse to throw 170, 180 innings in like a 8-month span, or like you would in the majors if you factor in spring training, or is it even worse when you're throwing that many innings but you're spreading it out over almost like 9-10 months when you're not giving yourself any extended amount of time off to recuperate?
An interesting discussion about this. I understand this is has a lot to do with about money, that guys are looking to make sure they can pay their bills. I totally understand that. But I'm wondering if there is a perception that a guy who plays winter ball is rated higher or looked in a better way with affiliate scouts, and maybe there's, if you really want to make it, you think you have to pitch in the winter leagues.
Well, I think it's a factor of exposure, too, where guys are thinking if I'm pitching winter ball, that means more chances for me to be seen also.
And we're going to see.
And maybe guys just don't want to get a real job during the off season.
Well, you can't say you're arguing with the reasoning behind it if you got to spend 3 months in Australia. So, you know.
Maybe they just hate winter.
Very much could be. Well, Kevin, as part of that Winnipeg deal that sent Thompson to the Goldeyes, the Sioux Falls Canaries add Alex Bouchiers, and then they add Deshanko Ricardo, kind of a surprise from Lincoln that they would trade away, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in the future. But nice battery added for the Sioux Falls Canaries with Bouchiers and Ricardo.
Yeah, definitely, and we don't know what we'll see with Max Garrett this year, if he'll come back to Sioux Falls or if he's and move on to the next chapter in life or not, but I got to imagine, yeah, both Ricardo and Garrett, that's a pretty solid combo behind the plate. Maybe one of them will get some time in at DH or play some first base or whatever, so we'll see what materializes out there next spring.
I think both of us are a little surprised to see Ricardo dealt, because Lincoln had kind of built up a nice Netherlands connection right there with their group of Randolph Odeber and Angel Reyes and stuff, and then all of a sudden he's dealt.
Yeah, we were surprised by that. But that if you remember around the trade deadline, we were wondering too if Odeber was going to get dealt, and talk was that the Salt Docs didn't want to break up that Netherlands connection, and that's why Odeber ended up staying with the Salt Dogs. But yeah, definitely a surprise move there.
Lincoln adds Cecilio Pimentel, if I can speak correctly today. Pimentel was having a phenomenal year until he has his contract purchased to go to Mexico. I'm sure that this is kind of a move. Lincoln may not get him at all, but boy, if he winds up coming back, nice guy to start building a rotation off of.
Yeah, I believe he has been there before. I know there's another. Is there Cecilio and Carlos?
Yes.
It kind of seems like the two have been interchangeable, because I think they have both been with the same teams yet at separate times. So yeah, I think one of them needs to change their name to Smith or something like that. I can't make it easy on the rest of us.
At least they can have a little different first name. It can't start with the same letter. That just makes it a little too complicated.
Right.
You know? I mean, we're not that smart. So you know, let's establish that right off. Milwaukee
Jack, I don't know.
The Milwaukee Milkmen add three more guys. We looked this up. It looks like all three of them came from Frontier League. It's interesting that the team is reaching out to primarily Frontier League guys.
Yeah, you have to wonder if there's a connection that somewhere along the way there. As of now, they've not publicly named a general manager or a director of player personnel or a field manager. So you have to wonder who is the person making the calls, and if we're going to be seeing a manager with Frontier League experience, or what the deal is there, because now you got two teams, the Traverse City and Normal, that are not going to have teams, and you got players that are looking for ball clubs, and you're looking at coaches too that are looking for somewhere to coach. So I guess that's going to be the big question to be answered in Milwaukee. Who's going to lead the Milkmen?
You're bringing up such an interesting situation because here's a team signing a number of players, I think pretty near 20 now at this point, and we don't even know who's really calling the shots right now.
Right. You need a head milkman before you send them all on the road.
Yeah, exactly right. Somebody's got to be back at the office or whatever that is, in the dairy farm. I don't know what you'd call it there, but something out there. Cleburne, I talked with Dan Vaughn when he was with me on the show that they've made a number of moves since Josh Robertson has become the player personnel director. The formal selling of the team was at its last moment of the city of Cleburne formally turning the contract over the new owners for the stadium from the previous owners. I don't have information on where Cleburne is at this point. And plus where their front office beyond Josh Robertson is going to be. So we're going to have to kind of wait that one out, I guess.
Right. And I hope whoever takes over there, all due respect to the previous ownership, they can need some more aggressive marketing down there. Seemed like last year they were kind of just putting all their eggs in the basket with Rafael Palmeiro playing well. He didn't play a lot of the time, and, you know, it's a one-off thing. If someone wanted to see Palmeiro play, they went there, they saw him play once, and I was like, okay, well, saw Rafi play, why do I need to come back? So yeah, I definitely would like to see a little more aggressive marketing down there. From what I heard, it's a beautiful ballpark. It's a fun intimate place to watch a game at. So it'd be even more fun if you filled it up.
Yeah, great place to see a game. You know, talking about the Palmeiro situation, I think that's going to be an interesting conjecture about whether he decides to come back next year. You know, as you said, I think he only played in like 47, 48 games. And so is it... Does he want to play more with his son, or he has a long-standing history, I know, with Josh Robertson, dating back to the NBC tournament. So I would assume he'd be kind of open to the idea. I just wonder if he's kind of questioning whether he's got the physical stamina to continue to play.
And we don't know what's going on with Patrick either, whether he's looking at extending his career. I don't know if he was among the many guys that got released by Cleburne or not, so...
Well, what's
a lot of fans and butts there right now, so we'll see how the offseason pans out.
Well, let's look that up, because that is a very good question. And no, his name was not included in that, so he might be back there. That'd be interesting, especially considering a more veteran-laden team with a lot of the guys that, if they should stay at Travis Banwert and at Logan Watkins, if those guys should be around, that'd really be something. And he could be a nice DH in that lineup there. So see how that materializes out. We want to move on to the St. Paul Saints. They released Zach Walters, brought over from the Kansas City T-Bones. We weren't surprised by this move whatsoever.
No, he's in training, becoming the CEO, and I never really got to meet him personally myself, but I've heard really good reports from other people that have, and I wish him nothing but the best as he strives to become a Navy SEAL and help defend our country.
If you've seen the size of my belly recently, you'd see that I've been training to be a SEAL of a different kind as well. There's also the documentary about the Saints coming out.
Yes, right now, if you go on fortheloveofthegame.co, Jordan Lynn has created a website where for $5 you can buy a digital download of the documentary that he did on the Saints. It was a one-hour documentary on the history of the St. Paul Saints. And even if you're not a fan of the Saints, perhaps, but if you're really interested in independent baseball and how to run a team and what's behind running a team and just a real history of the independent baseball scene, and in particular St. Paul, it's a really entertaining documentary, and you won't regret watching it, I guarantee you that. It's about an hour plus, but it's just really good stuff. And as Jordan was nice enough to include a review I did of the premiered movie and on the website, and you know, the point I made, I'm not sure if it's on the review or not, was that if I were to sit down and write a history of the St. Paul Saints, it would look a lot like what he did with the movie. I just think he covered all the bases. He covered the highs. He covered the lows. It's just a really well-done production. So, folks, The Long Winter, and if you want to get a fix of independent baseball, I would highly recommend it. Its website is fortheloveofthegame.co, and in there you can, there's a link you can click to buy the digital download. It's only $5, so you're well worth your money and well worth your time.
It would have been better if there was a large number of Kevin Lucco segments in it, but we still liked it. So, other than that,
yeah, I was proud enough that he actually reached out to me to ask to put a little bit of my review onto the website. So, if I'm part of it that way, that's just fine with me.
Well, Kevin, let's move around a little bit throughout independent baseball, and we want to talk specifically about the Frontier League. This last offseason, it looked like a few Frontier League teams are closing down operations and moving on to join the Northwoods League or the Prospects League. An interesting kind of transition. What are your thoughts about what might be driving this?
Money. let's just put that out there. I'm going to flat out say it. It's a disturbing trend. As much of an advocate as I've been for the Northwoods League, it's gone from being a place for kids to get a chance to learn the minor league way of doing things to basically just becoming a cash cow for the owners, and it's like the kids are just kind of being used. I'm hearing that the quality of the play in the league has dropped as the league has expanded because there's only so many good players out there. And if you keep adding teams, you're diluting the talent pool. And it just doesn't seem to matter to the owners. They're setting up shop. They're selling tickets. They're not having to pay the players. And that's the key part. You don't have any salaries to pay. Most of your front office are interns.
What's the age that a player can play up to in there? Is there a maximum?
Yeah, he has to have eligibility left.
Oh, okay.
Once in a while, you get a kid or two that is a post grad, but for the most part, it's guys that are currently in college. So therefore, well, legally you can't pay them. And well, of course, of course, you guys own the team, they're more than happy to not pay them. So, you know, a lot of teams, they treat these guys really well. They have good host families, and players are taken care of. But then, once in a while, you hear stories of guys that are just kind of scrapping. They're having to eat leftover concession stand food for meals. You know, some teams aren't giving them a very good post-game spread, and it can be a struggle for these guys. You know, they're a long way from home, and they're tired, they're hungry, they're playing a grueling stretch of baseball. So, but yeah, it just seems like the league is gone from being a developmental league, and boy, I'm going to hear this from Matt Bomberg if he ever listens to this show. It's gone from being a developmental league for these kids to, it just seems like more it's a moneymaker for the owners.
You know, last year before the American Association season got underway, there was big talk about, as part of the tax cuts and budget bill, that a new minimum wage law had been put in place for minor league baseball that required whatever the minimum wage that players were required to be able to pay that amount, which is $1,160 or whatever it was. And we kind of talked about at that point how that would impact independent baseball. And I'm wondering if this is Frontier League owners saying, you know, we don't have the money to pay 23, 22 guys or whatever it is in the league $1,100 or more a month, in where they were paying mostly like $500 or $750. And I wonder now, if this is the concern about Frontier League guys, you know, the Pecos League and the Pacific Association got to be on the doorstep of doom, I'm thinking.
Well, it's very possible, and who knows, maybe some, I know you're a lot more in touch with college football than I am, but isn't there something where the players are getting a little bit of a stipend now in the major football programs?
They've talked about doing that, but I don't think it's been formally done yet in, like, the Power 5 conferences. But it is a plan to do that, yes.
And I could see somewhere down the line where maybe that they would force these college baseball players to at least get a little bit of money per hour, too, for basically kind of giving themselves up to work. And I know it's classified as being an internship, but I mean, come on, let's be serious here. These players are being exploited to make these owners money. And yes, the players do get the experience of playing in the Wood Bat League, but so, you know, there's two sides of it. You know, the players basically interns, and is the experience good for them, or are they being exploited? So,
well, I think we're going to see over the next couple of months, probably heading into like March, if this becomes an even bigger trend throughout the Frontier League, where they say, hey, you know, what these guys did at Traverse City, and what is the other city? Was it Joliet?
Normal,
yeah. That have decided to jump out of the Frontier League and get into summer college baseball. This could become the whole league, maybe, or forming some other league or something. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen. So, sad.
You know, the president of the Northwoods League, Dick Raddatz Jr., has been very outspoken on his own league. And he talks about independent baseball as a league of has-beens and never-will-bes. Well, where do you think a lot of these never-will-bes played in college during the summer before they joined the independent ranks?
Yeah, that's a nice rhetoric to give when you're trying to bash something. But there's no reason to bash it. I mean, that's just a crazy comment.
I have done a blog in the past of the connection between the St. Paul Saints and the Northwoods League. A lot of these guys played in there during the summers when they're in college. So,
yeah.
I know we have an interesting situation coming up where St. Croix Falls is right on the border of Minnesota and Wisconsin. And there's an ownership group there that is converting a dog racing track to a ballpark. And they are supposed to have a team starting up next year. I have read in an article where it sounds like the ballpark may not be ready, but the St. Croix Riverhounds, I believe they're called, they listed what their ticket prices were going to be. And I have to say the St. Paul Saints really have nothing to fear, because they are pricing college summer wood bat baseball in line with what the Saints are charging for professional baseball with guys that are good enough to be in affiliate baseball, and in some guys' case, good enough to be close enough to be in the majors. So
that's crazy.
We will see how that kind of all pans out here. But as that stands, I don't see the Saints losing many fans to an upstart team.
I hope that whoever the guy was who did the play-by-play for the dog track is the guy who's their baseball announcer, because I think that'd be awesome. Absolutely awesome.
You just see the first pitch, and they're off.
Yeah, exactly. And he's down into the alley, and the ball is heading in. He's rounding first. He's on his way to second. That'd be awesome.
Give Joey Zanaboni a run for his money.
Well, Kevin, we're going to come to a part of the show where one team is going to be incredibly upset, because we are about to give our World Series predictions. So one of these teams is going to be very unhappy if we pick them. So let's hear who you believing is going to win the Major League Baseball World Series.
I am picking the Boston Red Sox to win in 6 games. I just feel like up and down the lineup, they are a lot more powerful right now than the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I believe the pitching is more experienced and there's more depth. So, congratulations to the Dodgers on your first World Series championship since 1988, and you're welcome, Sean Aaronson.
And to make it twice as bad, I am also going with the Boston Red Sox in 6. The one thing the Dodgers got going for them is their power, but they were second in the majors in home runs to the Yankees, and that didn't really help the Yankees against the Red Sox, so I'm not looking for that to help the Dodgers much either. So, I grew up a Dodgers fan, and it'd be nice to see my team win a championship once again there. So congratulations to them. You know, Kevin.
You know, I used to, Annie Heidekoper used to work for the St. Paul Saints. She was, her and a long time Whaley were a big part of getting the CHS field built. Well, Annie is a lifetime-long Red Sox fan, and Tom Whaley is a diehard St. Louis Cardinals fan. So me being the facilitator of the whole thing, when the Red Sox and Cardinals met up for the World Series, I forget what year it was.
13, I think? Was that 13?
Yeah. I helped facilitate a bet between Tom Whaley and Annie Heidekoper. And they... I said, well, okay, why don't you wear the other team's jersey if the other team wins the World Series? Well, they tweaked it a little bit. So the bet was if the Red Sox won the World Series, that Tom Whaley was going to have to wear a Chicago Cubs jersey at a Saints team.
That's a nice bet.
And vice versa, if the Cardinals won, Annie Hill was going to have to wear a New York Yankees jersey.
I like that.
I was there the night that Tom had to pay up on the bet. And my good friend Bill Tyler had Ernie Banks, some Chicago Cubs jersey in his collection. And Tom Whaley had to spend a good part of the night walking around Midway Stadium with a Cubs jersey on. So I don't know if I threw it out there for Sean Aronson, broadcaster of the Saints, a lifetime Dodgers fan, to make a bet with Annie Heidekoper over the World Series. I don't know if anything would come of it, but I did kind of throw the idea out there, so we'll see if those two got together and made a deal or not.
You know, Kevin, I wanted to talk about something you and I addressed late last season during the Major League Baseball. I think it was like heading into the playoffs at that point, about the fact that we're seeing a lot of teams kind of turn to the idea of using their starter for just one or two innings, basically a reliever, and then kind of letting their bullpen handle the rest of the game out there. And we even kind of talked last year about we could see that becoming the trend of baseball, and maybe that really is coming to fruition. We might actually have had something right.
Right, and we even saw it during the season where some teams employed an opener who they knew were only going to throw like one or two innings, and then they're going to turn it over to a starter-type pitcher who would, or a long reliever who would go like maybe three or four innings. But yeah, I don't think this trend's going to go away, and we saw it used extensively by Milwaukee in the playoffs because, frankly, Milwaukee had a weakness. It didn't really have a dominating starting staff. I think the only two guys I really trusted were Wade Miley and Jolas Chacin. So, and, you know, mixed results of guys like Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns established themselves really well during the playoffs, and maybe they'll become regular starters. Yeah. The Brewers next year are both very young, but we saw it work well, but then we also saw if you have one guy that had an off night, it was going to neutralize the good work of everybody else.
Yeah, the Oakland A's decided to employ that during the wild card game against the Yankees. Didn't really work out for them, but this has been a guy that had made 10 starts for them during the regular season. I don't remember what his name was right offhand, but all of them had been, you know, 1.2 innings or whatever before he was pulled out of the game. As a matter of fact, his longest outing was actually a relief appearance. So I thought that was kind of weird.
Hendricks, I believe.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So it is an interesting new strategy that I could see getting employed. You know, teams are carrying 13, 14 pitchers now, so... the only thing I think that kind of stands in the way of that moving down to the independent ranks is number of players on the roster.
Right, yeah, you'd almost have to have an expansion where guys could have a 13 or 14-man pitching staff and be able to pull that off without guys just getting raggedly tired. As we all know, the independent baseball season's even more condensed to get their 100 games, and the major leagues are to get in 162. So, And I don't know, you know, maybe you get to the point, too, where pitchers are going to get more conditioned to working 2 out of 3 days or 3 out of 4, where now they're maybe working once every one out of two or three days. So,
well, you know,
we'll see what the trend's going to be.
An interesting part of that has been that, like, Kershaw pitched game 5 through 7 or 8 innings. I think it was even 8, and came back and pitched in game 7. So, you know, it's kind of it's your day that you would normally be throwing in the bullpen or whatever, and maybe some teams are just saying, well, I could throw a guy back out here every 2 or 3 days and let him pitch 2-3 innings because that's what they normally do anyway.
And maybe guys are going to have to be pitchers instead of throwers, where they're going to have to realize, hey, this is my 3rd out of the last 4th day. I'm going to have to try to mix in my breaking pitches and that, since I really don't have my fastball today.
Yeah,
so
not going to come out and throw 103 miles an hour for 9 of my 10 pitches during an inning, you know, every time I go out there. So that would be nice to see, because I missed the days of the Mike Flanagans and guys like that. So I'm an old guy, so I miss those days still, though.
Right, and right now it just seems like the trend's getting to be everyone's a smoke thrower, and the hitters are into this whole launch angle stuff, and we're seeing between the guys throwing harder and the guys swinging harder, we're just seeing a lot more strikeouts. There are not a lot of balls being put into play, and there's a lot of deep counts. Well, as we know, the deep counts mean that the game drags on, so.
Yeah, we're probably not going to see many more Greg Maddoxes and Tom Glavins ever again. So, well, Kevin, tell us what's going on with you these days.
Well, I'm just kind of knee-deep in the hockey season right now, and as I talked to you about earlier in the day, we're with the Minnesota amateur baseball situation right now. We're seeing where my town might be forced into playing in a higher class than they should be, and part of it is being punished for our population, which is around 24,000, but it's the argument I got is that out of that 24,000 people, which is probably about 4,000 more than we used to have, 4,000 of them are immigrants as Syrians and Muslims, and that probably don't even know how to throw a baseball. So that's what a lot of my argument has been with some people online, is that you really can't judge how strong a town is in baseball by the population alone. There's got to be a better system. So that's been kind of my ongoing battle, and we'll be seeing a blog coming out on that sooner or later. So check it out at 10thanystretch.blogspot.com.
Awesome. I will be examining stuff going on around the league and kind of just keeping up to date on what's happening. I'll be talking about the Cleburne situations quite a bit over the next couple of weeks. And starting this Sunday will be the first of the 12 installments on looking back at each individual team from this past season, beginning with Texas. And each Sunday I will add a new team to look at, so you can catch up on what your team was at, and that should get you at least into next year while we be closing in on the season. So that'll be, you won't be too withdrawn from baseball at that point.
Well, you know, team owners are going to read that and use that to decide whether they're going to keep the manager or not, so no pressure, but 12 people have their jobs depending on what your review is going to be.
Yeah, I'm sure that I have become the source of information in their decision-making process. Yeah, that should. Oh, Rob said, well, we should do that.
You know? Well, we have an updated contract because we haven't got that review from Rob Pinier yet.
Yeah, if that should happen, it's time for those owners to sell their teams and find a better business to get into at that point. So,
Kevin, the people mentioning us, we ought to just give a thanks to Joey Mello's he recently appeared on a podcast of Bat Flips and Nerds talking about his trip through the U.S. this summer. He mentioned Rob and I both by name and gave a shout-out to the podcast, too. So I'd like to thank Joey for mentioning us, and we're hoping that he's going to be back in the States this year and paying us another visit.
Actually, he already worked out his job so that he finishes at his job just in time to be back for baseball. So Joey will be appearing on some of the shows that we have next year, and we'll be getting his insights as the season goes along. So that's pretty exciting for sure.
Yeah, that man lives a charmed life.
I know. So what a poor, I mean, I can't really argue because I'm doing kind of the same thing as him. So I can't really go, hey, that he's getting a break because I am too. So, Kevin, any final thoughts for us on this week's show?
Yeah, I just got one. Why am I not figuring this out too where I can do the same thing?
Well, we're going to have to get you into the scam of how this works right here. So,
Well, I'm just glad I was even allowed back this week after Dan Vaughn raised the bar so high. I thought for sure that I was going to be sent to enjoy future endeavors.
No, the show would not be the same without Kevin Lucco. It'd be better off with Dan Vaughn and Kevin Lucco than myself and Dan. That's what I'd tell you right now. So we got to.
Well,
have
I
Kevin
think it may be a three-way dance, you know, or maybe, you know, sometime we'll have to rig it up where we can get us two, Dan and Brad Allred, on for what we'll call the Super Show.
Well, you can count on that kind of thing happening with next year's show because we're going to be doing them as a video, and we'll be adding in play-by-play announcers as part of our broadcast. So. That would be a fun thing to do. That's going to be fun.
But if you get Brad and Dan going with you, I might just kind of be like the Cigar Store Indian, just kind of sitting there in the corner, not even making a sound, just listening. So I have to remember at some point, I have to talk at some point here.
Well, you know that your insights are always needed, so don't be getting crazy.
You know, if it's video, I'm not going to be there for my looks, so... I have to open my yapper at some point and try to say something interesting.
Always interesting. Well, I want to thank Kevin for joining me once again from the 10th inning stretch. Go out there and check out his blog. I'm Rob Pannier for the Minor League Sports Report, and we will talk to you next time on This Week in the Association.